At the end of the day, making free content doesn't come cheap. Show your support for the independent content you're listening to right now at patreon.com/acedetect. That's patreon.com/acedetect.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, the 20th of June. I believe this is the solstice, 2014. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, back to a regular Friday, Mr. Darren Kitchen is with us. How you doing, DK?
Super, super good to be here. Mission Specialist Captain Kitchen at your service.
You are in full NASA regalia. I can't wait to talk about this. And also Len Peralta here to illustrate the show. How's it going, Len?
It's going all right. It's going going terrific. It's good to be back. Missed last week, but ready to hit the ground, arty.
Ready, willing, and able to get arty in this house.
Get arty in there.
As they all say, I guess. Time for headlines. People familiar with the matter are back. Hey, remember yesterday's Reuters rumor about an Apple iWatch? Well, the Wall Street Journal has an even rumorier rumor that says the non-existent unannounced watch will have 10 sensors, including ones to track health and fitness, and it will come in multiple screen sizes. Now, those are just statements from unidentified sources. However, someone willing to go on the record was KGI Securities analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, who said, quote, watches are fashion accessories.
Yeah, and watches are accessories, unlike your smartphone, which actually has a market and you have a personal relationship with. I know I do, at least with my smartphone, but I don't so much with the Google Glass or my Pebble Watch. And I honestly am sorry to be such a skeptic. I just feel like this is so much of a Me Too ecosystem accessory that it's hard to get excited about.
Well, it's also hard for me to get excited about because we've been hearing rumors about watches and televisions. And you know what? When it's real, I'll see if I get excited or not. And to be fair to Ming-Chi Kuo, Ming-Chi Kuo said a lot of other things about the watches that are similar, but that was the one factual thing that we could all agree on. TechCrunch reports three Georgia Tech students claim to have hacked the Yo app. That's the app that searches your contacts for other people that have the Yo app and then allows you to send each other messages that say Yo, both out loud and in text. The Georgia Tech students emailed TechCrunch details on their ability to get any Yo phone number, spoof Yos, spam users with Yos, and send notifications with any text. Yo founder Orr Arbel says some of the security issues have been fixed and they're working on fixing the rest right now.
I'm officially old.
YOLO.
Hey, dog, you have bad input validation. Time to sanitize that. It requires a username? That's fantastic.
I don't know why anybody would want that. That's strange.
That's uber convenience. It's almost like it's at odds with security. No, I actually did check it. To their credit, it does seem like it is HTTPS traffic. And they did a little Wireshark foo, but nothing super obvious.
Mm-hmm. So, that's good. I wonder how this spoofing was happening, but hopefully they'll fix it. And yes, you don't want your phone number to be discoverable this way without your permission, but it could be worse, right? I'm not banking with Yo yet.
Yet? That's what we should be doing.
Yeah. Yo. Every Yo is a penny earned. TechCrunch reports Path is separating out a message app called Path Talk from the main Path app. Path Talk has ambient status updates that let friends know things like when you're traveling, when you're nearby, or have a low battery. Path also bought TalkTo and will roll its features into Path Talk soon. TalkTo lets you text businesses and then provides the back end for communication, either sending those texts directly to a business that texts you back or calling the business on the phone and then texting you what they said.
Let me try to follow this, Tom. What you're saying is with the Path app, I'll be able to like pull you up in my contacts and say I want to send you a message. I could do that over the Path Talk, but I would actually have to craft a sort of like thoughtful and engaging message, right?
No. Yes, you can do that, but it will also just say Darren just got up or Darren is traveling and you won't have to do anything.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? Between that and Yo, I think we're done with communication in this civilization.
Yeah, all the bases are covered. People can know whether I'm traveling or nearby and if I'm saying Yo. What else is there?
important thing.
Now, if only we could automate the yos, and then we wouldn't really have to do anything. Like social obligations done.
Some kind of automation. The next web reminds us the Microsoft Surface Pro 3's i5 processor version goes on sale in the U.S. and Canada today, starting at $799. The i3 and i7 models will follow on August 1st. As a side note, The Verge passes on that Paul Thurrott at Win Supersite discovered the Surface Pro 3 user guide is littered, according to Paul, with references to a Surface Mini. A lot of people expected a smaller Surface to be unveiled at the announcement on May 20th, and they only announced the 12-inch Surface Pro.
Do you have a Surface?
I actually got a hold of one yesterday. I have a Surface RT, and I got one from Microsoft that I think we're going to, I don't know, we have plans for it, so stay tuned.
Okay, because I'm trying so desperately to be excited about a $700-$800 Surface tablet-y, laptop-y hybrid thing, but I just feel like dollars to value, it comes nothing near an Ultrabook that you could actually, I don't know, create something on.
Yeah, I got a little excited during the announcement, then when I looked at the price and compared it to what I could get just from Lenovo, you know, with a detachable keyboard or a convertible or something like that, it starts to make less sense. CNET reports that search results for music on Android phones now returns links to launch music apps where you can listen to that music you were searching for. Android detects which apps you have installed and then offers you links to launch just those. It only works for certain apps. Right now, Google Play, iHeartRadio, RDO, Spotify, TuneIn, or YouTube. It also only works in the U.S., but Google plans to expand to other countries and other services. They even used Deezer in France as an example of one they would like to roll out.
See, I appreciate this when, like, Google are like, hey, we're good at search. And it's, like, not lock you into some music thing. It's just, hey, we noticed you got some apps. Let's show you where your music is. I like that.
Yeah, no, this
is... doesn't hurt anyone.
Yeah, exactly, especially because they're saying... I mean, I guess you could say, well, there's a neutrality argument. They're picking winners by supporting particular apps. So they have to try to cast as wide a net as possible. It would be nicer to have some sort of protocol that any music app could use. But short of that, it does seem like they're trying to say, like, we're not going to preference the Google Play app. We'll do others as well.
Yeah, I mean, and if you know, you're already in the Android ecosystem, it already knows what apps you have on your phone. So it makes sense. It's not like they're trying to upsell some other music service that I'm not using.
Yeah, absolutely. When I attended the University of Illinois, ladies and gentlemen, Ford Broncos were alleged to have been given to talented high school basketball athletes in order to lure them to play for the Illini. I'm curious what kind of rumors will swirl around recruitment of League of Legends players. For my friend's Joystick reports the U of I is offering scholarships for participants in the League of Legends High School Star League in order to induce them to play for Illinois in the Collegiate Star League. Will colleges start tempting prospects with Oculus Rifts or Razer prototypes or Alienware super machines in order to sign them and prevent them from jumping straight to Dota 2?
No, they will have to worry about Blizzard because they have now begun offering griffins and other flying mounts to expert World of Warcraft players for the Horde.
I was going to go to Illinois, right, but I got offered a griffin, so I'm going Horde.
You know, Stormwind, it's not what it's all cracked up to be.
Ah, we lost another recruit to Stormwind. Ogrimmar I can deal with, but Stormwind? Yeah. All right, time LFG for some...
Hogger.
What's that?
I just said LFG Hogger.
Time for some news from you. These are stories posted up on our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Techie Noob posted the TechCrunch story that the U.S. House of Representatives passed an amendment to the Defense Appropriations Bill, placing limits on how the NSA can gain access to communications, including email, online browsing, and chat histories. The amendment received bipartisan support, passing 293 to 123. It must also be approved by the U.S. Senate to become law. What do you think the chances are, Darren?
I just feel like, well, okay, so imagine it passes. Well, then the NSA will just have to use clandestine means to accomplish its mission of clandestine operations. Kind of funny how that works.
Well, but they were already doing that with the patina of legal justification. So, I mean, you wouldn't say that, sure, it's useless to go and say, you know what, we were giving you justification for this before. We're not going to give you that anymore.
Okay, so hearkening back to in pre-show when I was telling you when the law told me what I could and couldn't do, and then about flying my drone over a park, and then I was like, well, it turns out the way you've written the law, I can have my cake and eat it too as long as I fly it from here.
Right.
And so kind of same thing goes when the mission, you know, is that of theirs and they have the authority to do what they're doing. It's just a couple of proxy companies away from getting at what they need.
It's a fair point. But do you think that means they shouldn't pass the bill?
No, they should pass the bill.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'll meet you there. I'll meet you there and we'll lobby the Senate or something. I don't know. It's not going to pass the Senate. That's my thing. So it's not even going to matter. At least that's what I'm afraid of. S. Snapier sent along the Verge article that the FCC has issued its largest fine in history, $34.9 million. To Chinese company called CTS Technology that has been selling hundreds of models of signal jammers, which are against the law in the United States. The jammers could block radio communications. One of the concerns is they would block rescue communications or first responder communications. They also could block cell phone, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, satellite radio, and GPS, sometimes up to a half mile away. CTS is ordered to stop selling and marketing the jammers to U.S. customers and must hand over information about who bought them, as well as pay the fine. They have 30 days to appeal. TM204 has the post from Computer World about the passing of another print tech magazine. June 23rd will be the last dead tree edition of Computer World. Computer World's website will continue and get a redesign later this summer to help show features more. A new tablet version of the magazine is also going to launch on August 1st. And finally, Metal Freak submitted the Ars Technica report that Johns Hopkins University professor Matt Green asked one of the developers of TrueCrypt for permission to fork the existing code to start a new independent version. TrueCrypt's developers ceased work on that project at the end of May, you may recall. One of the developers responded to Green saying, quote, "I don't feel that forking TrueCrypt would be a good idea. A complete rewrite was something we wanted to do for a while. I believe that starting from scratch wouldn't require much more work than actually learning and understanding all of TrueCrypt's current code base." He did say use the source code as a reference. So they're really resisting this idea of using any of TrueCrypt's code at all for any reason.
Do you want me to put the tinfoil hat on or not?
Yeah, go ahead. Do you mind?
Okay, well, I mean, obviously, when the TrueCrypt developers found out that they had been hoodwinked the entire time and that it was the NSA all along developing it, they had to get some Latin out to warn us.
Yeah.
Or it was the other way around. And then they found out that they had been infiltrated by the NSA. No, wait. It was IncFS was trying to scorn their reputation and got a hold of their private key. You know what? There's too many I can wear. I'm sorry.
You know what? It's easier to just rewrite the whole thing from scratch. Now I get it. I get it. Too many tinfoil hats out there.
Crypto's hard. Let's go shopping.
Yeah, right. That's the news of the day. Hey, actually, I want to let folks know that Len Peralta and I did a comic book called 10 State, which you can find now not only on LenPeraltaStore.com in print version, but also in the Comixology store. And Len, they just put issues 1 through 5, which are the only ones we've done, all together as one bundle.
That is correct. You get all 5 issues, plus you get, there's an interview, a Bleeding Cool interview, some extra art in there, some there's some pretty cool special features. I don't want to blow it all, but it's a really neat little addition, and if you don't have it yet, definitely pick it up. It's at comixology.com.
The story is about some people on a television show in a dome, and then something bad happens, and they're forced to cooperate. And what's going to happen? You got to find out. Check it out. LenPeraltaStore.com or Comixology. All right. Now we move to the U.S. national parks. We've kind of touched on this before, especially with Darren, but even in other headlines where the Park Service has been trying to figure out how to keep the drones out for various reasons. And now they are ordering all 401 of U.S. parks to instate new rules that would ban the launch, landing, and flight of drones within park grounds. They say they're concerned about them drones bothering sheep, bothering birds, bothering other wildlife. Each park is being directed to amend its own rules. Two have done so previously, including the Grand Canyon. And the National Park Service is looking into ways that it can ban them from a national level as well. So this is different than the last time we talked about it, Darren, where they were trying to kind of hack their way into saying, oh, it's already banned, and it really wasn't. Now they're doing it the right way, which is amend the rules, make it against the law. Make it against the policy. Or get against the policy is a better way of putting it. You're right. I get why there could be problems, but you're a drone enthusiast. Make the case for me of why we shouldn't be why we should allow drones in a park. Because it seems like, well, I want to be peaceful. I don't want birds to be bothered.
Well, because there are a lot of fantastic and legitimate reasons why you would want to fly a drone over a park. I mean, some of these parks are some of the most beautiful places on Earth. And if you fly one of these like less than a pound, super quiet drones here over the park, you can experience with radio telemetry through like a set of kind of Oculus Rift goggles, a beautiful perspective of these really fantastic places. And, if we have the technological means to do that in a responsible way, why limit us just because somebody is going to, annoy some sheep, right? I figure if you're going to make a policy, just enact Will Wheaton's law. And that's a pretty good one, in fact.
Don't be named Richard or act like that's the nickname for Richard. That one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's, in fact, the policy that should be considered. In fact, I also think that it's funny, this talk about the Grand Canyon, because that is, in fact, where an incident took place that enacted or began the birth of an agency known as the FAA. It was when two planes crashed mid-air collision over the Grand Canyon that spurred Congress to create the FAA under the Department of Transportation. And its sole mission is to, make sure that there's safety of human life in air, which is why there's like a whole bunch of, why the FAA is now like trying to figure out what they're going to do about drones, because it's not human life in air, right?
Right. These are unmanned. They may be human controlled, but there's no humans in them.
Mm-hmm. And the FAA already has restrictions in place for certain things of this nature, not particularly the Grand Canyon nature-wise, but for instance, there are temporary flight restrictions that get put in place for flights below 3,000 feet or 3 miles around whenever Major League Baseball or the NFL or NCAA, anytime there's a stadium that has over 30,000 seats and there's a game, you can't fly in those areas for an hour before or after during the game. So, I feel like there are better ways to impose rules other than just enacting a policy because of one bad actor without considering all of the possibilities. I mean, typically I hold up, a quad or a hexcopter or something big and noisy, but, there are glider drones that would go completely unnoticed. I feel like right now the FAA is already grappling so much with how they're going to regulate drone use right now that it would be, I just feel like it's not prudent for the National Park Service to make a policy until, say, maybe November, when the FAA has had a chance to actually publish its upcoming what would then become law.
There's two ways of going about this, though, right? One is to say, all right, we're going to start small and say only that it is against our policy for you to fly near wildlife. It is against our policy for you to fly near humans. Because one of the situations they described was somebody's climbing El Capitan, right? And then a drone shows up and distracts them right in the middle. And what you're saying, Darren, is, yeah, of course, that should be against the rules, but just make the rules against that. You can start that way and say, these are the situations we know are bad and we'll learn as we go. Or you can go the other way, which is we're going to just make it quick and ban all of it and then slowly allow certain things to happen. As an enthusiast, I get why you want it to be like, let me do as much as I possibly want. But there is something to be said for like, hey, people want to be peaceful in a park. Prove to us why you should be allowed to fly these quadcopters and how you could do that responsibly and fly other drones.
Right. I mean, and what you're just talking about is like a blacklist versus a whitelist. And it's not like this is the first time that the NPS has had to deal with situations such as this. I don't know if you've ever taken part in the experience called geocaching. But at first it was like, whoa, wait, people are going to come to the parks and look for stuff. And so the reaction by a lot of the park communities were to ban geocaching within their premises. But in actuality, all that sport was doing was bringing people into nature to and having them hike up trails. Whereas they might not have otherwise. I know that I may not have otherwise had there not been a cash or a prize at the end. And, in the end, like there's when you look at the geocaching community, they're their mantra is like, leave it better than you found it. And these are the kinds of people that you actually want in your park. And if you look at, say, the policies of the American Modeling Association and some of the other I hate to use the word drone in this case, but model aircraft enthusiast clubs, they're very similar in that regard. And to Jonathan Jarvis' statement here about you're, you know, climbing up El Capitan and there's a, you know, a GoPro equipped drone flying beside you. Well, if I'm that, you know, rock climber, I kind of want that there. Hopefully that's mine or my buddy's, because I want that footage, because, you know, you're being a badass. You should have awesome video of you being a badass.
Makes sense. One way to be a badass would be to fly your quadcopter on, I don't know, one of Saturn's moons, like Titan, for instance. Oh. Take that, Park Service.
Yeah. You know, last time I was flying at the park, the guy was like, hey, we got an ordinance. You can't fly here. And I was like, are you kidding? I can't fly here at the park. He's like, go fly it somewhere else. That's where he should have done. He told me to go fly it on Titan.
Go talk to Larry Mathias, a research scientist and supervisor at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory here in Pasadena, California. He is proposing quadcopters to fly out of either a lander or a balloon on Titan that could make several trips to multiple points on the surface. So instead of a heavy lander like we've done on Mars that can only go a certain amount of range, you have a quadcopter fly to different parts of the surface, collecting different kinds of samples, bringing back liquids, bringing back solids, doing actual high-res imaging and mapping very close to the ground and in places that you couldn't get with a lander. He is proposing a 22-pound drone, says it's lower cost than the landers have been in the past, and NASA has recognized this, awarded Mathias' team $100,000 to keep working on designs. A lot of this news coming out in celebration of the Cassini probe bouncing some more radio signals off Titan for the second time on Wednesday, second time in 2 months. So this is really cool, Darren. I mean, drones getting a bad rap in the Park Service maybe temporarily, but could be our future for space exploration.
Mm. I mean, well, are satellites already not drones? I mean, that's kind of what they are. They're unmanned vehicles.
Let's say quadcopters, like, then, because that definitely opens up a possibility that you couldn't have done before.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I mean, because you got to figure there's got to be some sort of atmosphere to make that work. But, okay, so I'm actually such a drone enthusiast. However, at the same time, I must say, that's kind of a huge undertaking, and so I would love to see them take this on and be successful in it. But I just kind of want to point out, it's not as easy as just, like, you know, taking a Parrot AR and just tossing it on a moon. You've got things like, you know, lag, for instance, and lag between us and Mars is kind of a bit. You've got the complexity of the avionics. You don't have, you know, GPS to fall back on to know where you are. Magnetometers, you know, that's going to be different. Like, all of the different sensors and everything that goes, all of these inertial measurement units that go in are going to have to work different. And I know they already do, and it's in a way for the rovers. But the rovers are done for a reason, because you're not going to crash by just sitting there. It sounds really cool, but it just sounds really complex and expensive. There's things like battery life and all these other things that need to be addressed. And maybe, though, it's one of those things like Velcro, where it's because of the space agency that we get it. You know,
that we develop better quadcopters. Right. Yeah.
Right.
To totally see that. I mean, you're making it sound like rocket science, which is what they do. So if anybody can pull it off, I feel like they're the right people to try.
Sure, but like, as if we don't have eyes in the sky already. I mean, how many years was the ESA's Mars Express satellite probe thing?
Yeah, but there's a lot more you could do, a lot higher resolution you could do if you could get, and you bring up some good qualifications, but if you could get a quadcopter to fly close to the ground, multiple points, you could get the same close-up field that you get with the landers, but with a lot more range.
Sure, you're right. If your satellite is, so instead of at 10,000 feet, you're hanging out just a few feet over the ground. You're right. You can get higher resolution, and then you see something interesting. You're like, "Ooh, check out that rock! Let's drill a hole in it and do some experiments." If only we could, like, land and have wheels and arms and cameras.
They're gonna have to figure out how to scoop it up and take it back to the balloon or the lander or whatever it is that they have. But that's what they're getting $100,000 to do, is to figure out that stuff. I hope they do.
Me too.
Yeah. All right, let's take a look at the calendar. Monday, June 23rd, Diane von Furstenberg launches 13 new ladies' frames and shades for Google Glass. Are you modeling Google Glass?
Oh, actually, hang on. I forgot about that. I actually do have a pair of the new shades. What do you think?
They're actually pretty good. I mean, you still got the bulky Google Glass thing hanging.
Sure, but it disappears there. More. And I must say, wearing it this way is a lot more comfortable. It's more balanced.
Monday is also the last day to make your $200,000 wire transfer to a government bank so you can bid on Silk Road's bitcoins, because who doesn't want to bid on money? Also, the last chance to be accidentally revealed as someone who's interested in Silk Road's bitcoins by a government official who doesn't understand how BCC works. And finally, Monday is the start of the Future Stores 2014 conference, which bills itself as, quote, the only conference focused on the challenges faced by store, operations, IT, cross-channel, and retail customer experience. Executives trying to bridge the gap between the digital and store experience. So, Internet of Stores. Futurestores.wbresearch.com. I'm going to throw out a pick of the day we've mentioned before, but I've been using it to try to brush up on my Spanish, Duolingo.com. You can get it on the web. You can get it on an app. It trains you in a language. And one of the cool things it does, it lets you practice the language. Once you get to a certain point, it'll say, you can read 37% of all Spanish articles or whatever language you're working on. And then it gives you something to translate. That translation is actually how Duolingo pays its bills, because they use the crowdsourced translations to come up with an actual good translation that they then sell to people. So they're translating web pages for folks. It's really cool. Check it out, Duolingo.com. And you can find all our picks at DailyTechNewsShow.com. As you might expect, our discussion about Minecraft yesterday generated some emails. Tor Iver from Oslo wrote, regarding Mojang's adjusted terms of service, I think a significant reason is that they get the phone calls from angry users or parents that want to complain that the game charges extra for items after they paid for the client, because they don't realize there is someone else running the server. They just see the name Mojang when the client starts up. Also, Mojang probably sees this pay-to-win style of gameplay to be against their philosophy, which they definitely do, though it is hard to enforce philosophies, so they use terms of service instead. I don't know if you followed this much, Darren, the whole Minecraft controversy. We were talking with Russ Pitts about it yesterday, and essentially they've started enforcing their terms of service, which didn't allow people to charge for servers, even though people have been doing it for years, and they allowed them to charge for certain things, but the people who were charging for servers are saying, okay, but you're not allowing us to do the business the way we've been doing it, and it's been working fine in most cases. So Tor is explaining one of the reasons that Mojang might be against it. Jody Farrandon writes in from overcast and muggy London, England. I was listening Friday to yesterday's episode. You talked about Mojang and how they could take a leaf out of CCP's book in light of the updates and community feedback. CCP uses the Council of Stellar Management, CSM, as a sounding board to get feedback on the proposed changes that they want to bring to the game. Sometimes they act on feedback, sometimes not. In the case of Minecraft, I do not think this would be possible due to the popularity of the game and the fact that players run servers and not Mojang. CCP have roughly 500,000 subscribers to EVE Online, and it's all based on one shared universe, while Minecraft has a reported 14.3 million sales on PC alone, and anyone can host a server. This would make a council very hard to manage due to the sheer diversity of the players. Also, you can't please all the people all the time. To touch on the new rules that may or may not have been broken in the past that Mojang set, I have to say that rules are there for a reason, and if you break them, expect to get punished. But what is that old saying, common sense is not always common? So thank you, Jody. A couple of voices there in support of Mojang, which we haven't been hearing as much. We'll have a voice before the end of this show in support of the developers as well. But Darren, it's a really interesting example of having an open attitude and then having to deal with the blowback later.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
No, yeah, I wouldn't.
I absolutely hear you. We could totally go off on a tangent, maybe after the show.
Yeah, stick around if you're watching on the YouTube version. Len Peralta, what have you been drawing, my friend?
Well, you know, I said before we started today that it was a very derivative piece of art. And, of course, it is incredibly
in the best
derivative.
Way, that's awesome. In everything.
yeah, thank you. It's, of course, you know, the drones not being allowed in national parks, I think, has more to do with the stealing of picnic baskets than anything else. And this is, the image here is of Yogi and Boo Boo. And Boo Boo saying, the ranger is really cracking down on you stealing picnic baskets, Yogi. Anyway.
That's classic.
So there you go.
Makes me want to have peanut butter and jelly.
Yes. Mm. And talk like this.
and to go to Jellystone.
Exactly. Jellystone Park.
Hooray.
I was more excited to go to Jellystone than Yellowstone when I was a kid.
Yeah, and so this image is now available right this second at the online store.
LenPeraltaStore.com. Check it out.
Yes, check it out, along with all the other great images I've done for Daily Tech News Show.
You're going to have to do a book.
Yes, you know, I actually, well, we will talk about that offline.
All right. Mr. Darren Kitchen, a pleasure as always. Good to have you back on a Friday. I missed you last week.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's good to see you again. I did see you Friday last week, actually.
Although you're right. I did, actually. The reason that I missed you on the show is because I was going to an event in which I saw you in person.
Yeah. And you saw Shannon Morris. Through Google Glass when you married her.
Yes. I didn't marry. I performed the marriage. I married her to someone.
Right.
Yeah.
Qualify that.
Just want to make sure everyone understands that. HAK5.org if you want to see Shannon and Darren doing their thing.
You know what? She's showing off some open source encryption alternatives to TrueCrypt, and I have a special guest on where we are building a open source drone. So check it out.
Yeah. That sounds great. HAK5.org. Thank you to the patrons out there. 4,138, and the number keeps rising, which is incredible. We really appreciate those who can continue to support the show. And I know not everybody can, and that's fine. The ones who can help make it available for everyone else, and we truly value you. Patreon.com/AceDetect or bit.ly/helpDTNS. If you see a little value in the show and you can afford to give a little value back, we appreciate it. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover at our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Give us a call, 512-59-DAILY. That's 512-593-2459. And listen to the show live at mobile.alphageekradio.com at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 p.m. Pacific. Our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back Monday with Lamar Wilson as our guest. See you then. Or talk to you then.
Hey, Tom, this is Ray in Jacksonville, Florida. I was just listening to yesterday's episode, number 2260, about Minecraft. And this actually affects me personally. I was running a Minecraft server with my brother-in-law. And I tell you what, you hit the nail on the head. This is exactly like what happened with Twitter. It's a bait and switch. And as much as I love the people at Mojang, I have to be skeptical and I really think this was a business decision, because the timing of when this all happened, right as they're about to roll out the Realm servers around the world, it's just too close to be a coincidence. They just realized that a lot of servers were making money off of the freemium model, which that's how most of the servers ran. You could play in the server for free, but to get upgrades or to get, you know, extra permissions, you had to pay for it. And that model we've seen in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store is the most profitable right now in gaming. You know, you can do pay-to-play or you can do the whole donation route, but it's just not as profitable as the freemium model. You get people in there, they get excited about the game, and then they pay for the extras. And it just seems ironic that that is the one that they specifically said can no longer be done. That's the model. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if in a few months, as the Realm servers come out, they're going to have it where you can pay for upgrades there, but the server still won't be able to do it. Anyways, that's just my two cents. Like I said, I was running a server before, and we shut it down based on the change of service agreement. Or not, they didn't change it, but you know what I mean. Anyways, thanks. Love the show. Talk to you later.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.